This is the Living Homegrown Podcast, episode 124.
Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast, where it's all about how to live farm fresh without the farm. To help guide the way to a more flavorful and sustainable lifestyle is your host, national PBS TV producer and canning expert, Teresa Lowe.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lowe, and this podcast is where we talk about living farm fresh without the farm, which includes preserving, small space food growing, and just taking small steps towards living a more sustainable lifestyle. Now, if you would like to learn more about any of these topics or my online courses or my Living Homegrown membership, just visit livinghomegrown.com. Today's topic is all about raised bed gardening. Now, if you live in an area where maybe your soil's not so great, but you want to have a garden, or maybe you don't have any space at all, you don't have any dirt, maybe you only have cement in your backyard and you'd like to garden, or you want to have more accessibility to what you grow, any of those reasons, this is the episode for you. I brought on Tara Nolan, who has recently written the book Raised Bed Revolution, Build It, Fill It, Plant It, and Garden Anywhere. Now, Tara is one of the garden bloggers at SavvyGardening.com, and I've had some of the other bloggers from that website here as well. These ladies always know their stuff. So I was super excited to meet Tara and bring her on when this book came out, because this is a really important topic, especially if you have a backyard that just doesn't lend itself to letting you garden directly into the soil. But I will let Tara tell you all the reasons that you might want to do raised bed gardening. She goes deep into that in this podcast. But before I do that, let me tell you a little bit about Tara. Tara Nolan is a garden writer, author, editor, and speaker. Her work has appeared in the Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, Best Health Magazine, and numerous other magazines. Her first book, Raised Bed Revolution, was published by Cool Springs Press in 2016. In 2013, she co-founded the popular gardening website Savvy Gardening, SavvyGardening.com, with three other writers, and it has won gold for Best Overall Digital Media at the Garden Writers Association Media Awards in 2017. Tara was also the award-winning web editor of Canadian Gardening Magazine's website for 6 years, and she's the social media editor of the Canadian Garden Council. And in her, when she has any extra time, she volunteers at the Royal Botanical Garden. So I wanted to bring her on really, first of all, to tell you all of the benefits of raised bed gardening and the things that you have to consider to do it. But I also wanted you to realize from listening to her talk that you don't have to, you know, be a whiz with power tools to have raised beds. You know, I don't want people to think, oh, I'd love to do that, but I don't, you know, have a degree in construction, so I can't build a raised bed. There are some really simple solutions that I'm going to have her go into so that you can have a raised bed without having to even break out a power tool if you don't want to. Now, as always, I will have in the show notes for this episode everything that Tara talks about, including links that she mentions on some of the resources that she talks about. And to get to the show notes, you just go to livinghomegrown.com/124, and I will also have a full transcript of the episode there. All right. So with that, let me bring on Tara Nolan of Savvy Gardening to talk about raised beds. Hey, Tara, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited about this one. This is something I haven't covered on the podcast before, but I loved your book, Raised Bed Revolution. I thought it was really well done. You were very thorough, and there's so many things that I think hold people back from diving in with raised beds. So I love that we're going to cover this today. But before we start, could you just tell everybody a little bit about what you do in the gardening world and how you became interested in raised bed gardening specifically?
Absolutely. Well, I do a lot of garden writing. I'm sort of in the garden media world, and I run a website called Savvy Gardening with three other garden writers, and two of us happen to be in Canada and two are in the United States. So it's really interesting because we come from, very different gardening zones, and we're all sort of coming together and talking about, what we do in the garden, and we have different niches as well. So it's really fun to sort of, put together this gardening website. And, I write about gardening for different magazines and newspapers here in Canada, and I'm active in our local botanical garden. So I do lots of gardeny stuff, and of course I have my own raised beds, and I've sort of entered this publishing world with the book. So it's been really, really fun to get to know people that are also building their raised beds that have questions for me and see that they're responding to everything that's in the book that they've read. So it's really fun to see what others are building or creating as well.
Yeah, we're going to dive into some of the unusual things later in our talk today, but because you had some really great ideas that I had never seen before, very, very clever. So we'll talk about that. But I just thought this was just a really thorough way that you covered this. And was there a specific reason that made you want to decide to dive into being an author on this particular topic?
Well, I, when I moved into this current home that I'm in, and I decided to build raised beds more from an aesthetic standpoint and sort of elevate my garden, to make it a really attractive space in my yard, I thought, with the book opportunity, it was great because it marries two of my passions, one of which is gardening and the other is DIY. I love doing crafty things. And so I was already gardening in raised beds, but I wanted more. And so just that opportunity to create, something from, a flea market find, I loved that idea of being able to kind of delve in more and then also researching a lot of the benefits of raised beds because, as I mentioned, I started it just to, sort of make it a prettier space in my garden, but then I discovered that there's this whole host of benefits to raised bed gardening as well.
Well, I was going to say we should dive in absolutely into the benefits. I think that's probably where we should start because you had a couple benefits in there that I hadn't really considered. So let's start off with that. What are some of the benefits of raised bed gardening?
So I think one of the big ones that I discover with a lot of people is that idea of overcoming bad soil or hard packed or clay soil. So it's sometimes for some people, it's actually, preventing them from gardening because they might not get, the best results with their vegetables. So a raised bed is fantastic because they can build it over top of that poor spot. They can build a little bit higher and they can control all of the rich organic matter that goes inside.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And probably the number one reason I would recommend someone do it, at least, before I read your book, and I was thinking that is probably the number one reason that I would send someone down that path is if they just don't have the right soil, because it can take a long time to build up your soil to be awesome. And you can
Exactly.
do this in the meantime, or you may just decide that raised beds are the way to go because there's so many other benefits. I know one of the things you talked about was just the aesthetics of raised beds. They can be quite beautiful.
They can, and you see, all these sort of Pinterest-worthy images out there, even with people that have taken their front yard, because perhaps that's where the light is. They might have a big tree in the backyard and their space is in the front that's available for the heat-seeking vegetables. So you see some really lovely photos of people who have done a great job of actually landscaping with their raised beds.
Yes, fantastic. Well, what are some of the other benefits?
Accessibility is a big one. For people that have trouble bending over or kneeling in the garden, raised beds raise the garden up to wherever you need it to be. So it could come up to waist height if you really wanted it to, or just a few inches or feet up, then it allows you to kind of get into that bed easier and dig around and garden and plant.
Yeah, and you mentioned the front yard and really just even not having a spot at all, this can give you a place to garden.
Exactly. I like to emphasize that people can put a raised bed virtually anywhere, provided you have that 6 to 8 hours of sunshine that I recommend, for the vegetables, to thrive in your garden. And, also, as far as having bad soil, you might even just have a deck or a patio or flagstone or something. So you can put a raised bed over that as well.
Ah, that's a really good point. So when we're talking about raised beds, it really we should be thinking outside the box, not just the standard square or rectangle boxes, but that it could go not just in the garden, but on the patio. It could go even on cement, I suppose, if you really just don't have a spot at all.
Exactly. I've seen some on driveways as well. They've made use of that warm area and they've created a whole raised bed garden just from, you know, putting it over top of the concrete.
Okay, very good. So limited space is definitely one of the benefits. What are some of the others?
I would say another big one is that you can increase your yield. When I was researching the book, there was a fact sheet that I found. It was from Ohio State University, and they studied a raised bed over a few years and found that it produced almost twice the yield of vegetables that were grown in a traditional sort of, you know, plots of veggie garden.
Yeah, that one really surprised me when I saw that.
Yeah,
I found
that one really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so explain why. What are the reasons behind that?
It's funny because when I talk about that in my garden talks, I get a lot of questions about that. And I think one of the main ones is that the soil warms up sooner in the spring, so you can get your edibles in. They have a bit of a head start, perhaps, over a traditional vegetable garden. You know, you're also not walking between rows, so the soil is nice and friable. It's not compacted. You don't have, you know, that walking space that you would in a traditional vegetable garden. So you're actually adding more vegetables into perhaps the same amount of space because you're just reaching in from the sides.
Ah, yeah. Well, the warming of the soil has got to be key because it gives you much more of a jump start than you would normally have. So you end up getting a longer growing season, essentially.
Exactly. And certainly here in Southern Ontario, where I live, you know, it's really great to be able to maximize that time because sometimes, you know, spring starts a little bit later than you'd hoped. You know, you keep getting those frosts and, you know, it's nice to be able to get things into the raised bed and then you can get into, you know, the accessories you can use to protect your crops. So row cover and things like that.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't even planning on talking about that, but you do go into that in the book about how we can winterize our raised beds. And I find it just seems a lot easier to winterize a raised bed than it is in the soil. You know, it's so easy to build some sort of a structure or a hoop over the raised bed. And so you do cover that. So I guess that's also why you get a longer yield is that, you know, it's so easy to make it go longer.
Exactly. And, you know, I can extend my season sometimes well into November, early December, depending on Mother Nature. So it's really nice to be able to sort of keep things in the ground as long as possible.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Well, what about controlling weeds? I always think of that as being one of the benefits of raised beds. It seems like, you know, at least initially, because you're starting with fresh soil, you don't have the weeds that you might have in the soil in the ground.
It's true. It's nice starting from scratch, that's for sure. And I have, there's one side of my house where I want to add some raised beds and, you know, there's bindweed in there, which is just the bane of my gardening existence. But, you know, it's nice to be able to start fresh and add soil that hopefully, you know, hasn't been contaminated with any weed seeds in there. And then you can use things like mulch to, you know, prevent the weeds from growing up. So right now I planted my garlic in the fall and I've got a nice cozy bed of mulch over top.
Well, I know one thing for me with, it seems just a little bit easier for me with raised beds to do my crop rotations. And I'm not really sure why. I guess it's just easier to keep track of, you know, where I'm going and where I came from with, you know, like I'm moving my peas around or my tomatoes around the garden. So I know you mentioned that too, as one of the benefits in the book.
Absolutely. Because, you know, one thing, you know, we know as monocultures, you know, it's not a good thing to plant the same thing in the same space every year. So to a certain extent, you can use that in the, you know, in a smaller space and rotate crops around, which I do with all of my raised beds. And also I found, you know, I get the Colorado potato beetle, for example, that likes my tomatillos. And so they overwinter in the soil, unfortunately. So the one year I had a ground cherry that I brought home early in the season from a plant sale, and the Colorado potato beetles had evidently come back, and I went out and there were already holes in my plant. I hadn't even put it in the garden yet. So it's nice to be able to rotate those things, those different crops around, also for pest control.
Ah, very good. Yeah. And in case anyone doesn't know about the benefits of crop rotation, it's really also because your plant will draw certain nutrients from the soil as it's growing. And if you grow tomatoes, for example, in the same place over and over and over, the soil will be depleted of exactly what that tomato needs. And when you rotate, you can keep everything more in balance. And it's, you know, the best way to go as farmers do that. And but, you know, here in our little backyard plots, we might not think of that, but it really is an important thing to do. So very good. Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier to keep track of, you know, what was in box A and what was in box B.
I have a little chart. I have a garden diary, so I try to keep track of everything and make notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. I think that's really a lot of benefits. I mean, people can really see what the benefits of raised bed gardening is. So let's dive in a little bit into exactly what they need to consider if they want to do this in their backyard or their front yard or even their patio or balcony or anything like that. So what are some of the considerations that we need to keep in mind?
So definitely the location, you want to make sure that your space gets about 6 to 8 hours of sunshine a day. And you can just even do a little bit of a test and just go out at certain points during the day and see where the sun hits at various, you know, times. And it's nice just to do a little bit of a test like that if you're new to the space, you know, and you don't necessarily see where the shade comes in during the afternoon. My two original raised beds are actually, I live on a ravine. And so where they were placed, I have a bit more dappled shade than I used to when I moved in several years ago because the trees have gotten, the tree canopy has gotten bigger. Mm. So, you know, I have to kind of think, okay, maybe I'm not going to put my tomatoes in that space because it's not quite as warm as the space, you know, on the west side of my property. So, you know, I take that still into consideration with some of the raised beds that I have because my environment changes a little bit every year.
Yeah. You know, that's a really good point. Also, a lot of times people will be planning their garden for spring while they're sitting inside during the winter. And the thing they have to keep in mind is that the trees might be very different in the winter than they will be in the summer if
yes.
they're deciduous. So I know so many gardeners, who beginning gardeners especially, who've done this, but even, you know, intermediate gardeners do it where you go out and you're like, oh, I'm ready to plan my garden. And you start planning it. And then the tree canopy fills up in the spring with when the leaves come back and all of a sudden you actually are planting in the shade. So
exactly.
Definitely something to think about. Like, you want to look at the hours during the growing season so that you know exactly how many hours of sunlight you have. But yeah, so okay, location, definitely. What are some of the other considerations?
Well, you'll want to figure out what size you want it to be. And really, I like to emphasize that raised beds can be as big or as small as you need them to be for your space. If we're talking about those standard, you know, big rectangular raised beds, I usually say about 3 to 4 feet wide by 6 to 8 feet long and then 10 to 12 inches high.
Okay, perfect. And so is there a minimum depth that you would recommend? Like, you know, what would you not consider raised bed anymore if it's just too shallow?
It really depends on the soil underneath. So if you are planting your raised bed over a hard packed or clay soil that's just not workable, you want to keep in mind that when you're planting your root vegetables, you don't want them reaching down and hitting a wall essentially. So you might want to raise your bed up a little bit higher. I mean, if you're planting over really lovely friable soil, then you know you can probably go a few inches lower than the recommended height, because once those veggies are reaching into the subsoil, then, you know, they're still going to thrive if the soil underneath is good.
Okay. Now, what about the space between the beds? Because I know this was a mistake I made on my first set of raised beds. I made them a little too close together.
Well, you want to be able to comfortably kneel down or bend over between the raised beds, but also if you're replenishing soil or you're going back and forth from a compost pile or bringing in bags of soil in the spring, you want to maybe be able to take your wheelbarrow through. So maybe just measure, you know, what you're going to be wheeling through that space and place them accordingly.
Yeah, that was the mistake I made. It was on my very, very first garden that I ever had raised beds, and I wanted to fit as many as I could, and I made them really tight together, and it was the kneeling down part that really did not work out.
Yeah, you're sort of balancing.
Yeah, because yeah, exactly, because you really want to get down on your knees and have your knee, if it's up against that board, up against the wall, you don't want your foot to be in the next bed, which is,
exactly.
You know, or up against the wall. So I had them so close together, I had to garden kind of sideways because I couldn't go straight at my garden. It was terrible. And yes, it was not close enough for a wheelbarrow. So I learned on that one and I never made that mistake again. So I was glad you had that in the book. That was really good.
Yeah. It's an easy one to make.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you get overly excited and you want to fit as much as you can in there. So definitely mapping it out on paper, but thinking about that space, you know, how you're really going to be using it is important. So what about building materials, though? What can we make these raised beds out of?
So for all of mine, I've used untreated cedar. So I think untreated rot-resistant wood. You might want to do a little bit of research about what's available near you. My counterpart, Nikki Jabour, who's on the East Coast, she has hemlock more readily available. So that's what her raised beds are made out of. So, you know, just take a look at your local lumber yard or big box store, wherever you're shopping for wood, and perhaps ask, you know, someone just to make sure that it's rot-resistant and do a little bit of research and choose accordingly.
Very good. Yeah. And I know you talk about it in your book, but you have to be really careful with recycled wood. And because I know if we're food gardeners, I want to avoid pressure treated wood because it's treated with chemicals that I probably don't want in my garden. Or it could be, if it's older wood, could be very dangerous chemicals. So what do you recommend about recycled wood?
Well, I am all about upcycling. I have some upcycling projects in my book, but I do recommend to people that they make sure that if they're taking old boards from a deck or a fence that might have been pressure treated or treated in some way, that they maybe not use those for food gardening, or unless they know the exact place where they're from and what they're made of, you know, maybe use them for another project, but certainly not for a vegetable garden.
Okay, very good. And we are going to talk about the different ways that you can make it without having to use power tools, or, you know, have a raised bed without power tools. But I know one thing that you talk about in the book are those little corners that we can buy where we just cut the wood and drop it in. So there's some very easy ways to put this together without having to have a team of construction workers with you.
Exactly. And, you know, corners were a great discovery. I found some really fun ones through Gardener Supply Company. And then here in Southern Ontario, we've got Lee Valley Tools, and they have corners as well. So you do a little research and, you know, you can find these great contraptions that really you just have to have the wood sized and maybe a screwdriver to affix them to the wood.
Yeah. You know, and I've actually used these. They are really simple. I mean, you can put it together really quickly if you get all the wood cut to the sizes that you need. You know, it's kind of like putting together Legos. It goes really fast.
Yeah, and it's so easy. You can have a raised bed in an hour, probably.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't have to be scary. I don't want anyone to be intimidated that, you know, they have to be a construction worker to put these together. There are some really simple ways that you can do this, and we're going to go into that more. But I first want to talk about probably the most important component to your raised beds, and that's soil. I think sometimes people get hung up on that part because they're like, oh my gosh, if I build this, then I have to fill it up with soil and it's going to cost me a fortune.
Yes, and I had a lot of raised beds to fill, especially with the book. So I had, you know, a few projects that required a lot of soil. So I did a little bit of calling around and I ended up getting them at a soil depot nearby. And I spoke at length with the girl on the phone, just asking questions and probably annoying her, but I just wanted to make sure I was getting the best quality soil. And, you know, my recommendation is always just the best quality soil that you can afford, because it can get very pricey. And, you know, with a 4x8 raised bed, you don't want to be hauling bags from, you know, a garden center, you know, that might add up very quickly. So I tried to buy my soil in bulk. And then what I did was I top dressed all of it with compost. So, you know, if the first top few inches of soil, I just added a nice layer of, you know, organic vegetable compost, and then I was good to go.
Yes, very good. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to want to do that anyway. You'd even have a section on composting. So if someone wants to, you know, learn more about how to do that, but definitely having compost mixed in there is fantastic. And I did the same thing. I ordered my soil. So, it, you know, it was all dumped in by a truck, you know, a truck came and dumped it. And then we just wheelbarrowed it over to the raised beds. And it wasn't that hard to do. In fact, a lot of places when you call, you don't even have to do the calculations. I'll have in the show notes, you know, how you do the calculations, but you really don't even have to do that. They will do it for you. They'll just say, what are your measurements? And they'll figure out how much soil you need. So it really is not too hard to get your raised beds filled.
Exactly.
Well, I'm so excited to talk about this next section, which is some of the more unusual ways that we can make a raised bed out of more unusual ingredients, I guess, than just the typical lumber. You had a lot of step-by-step instructions in the book for different things, but you were really creative. And one that I really loved was that you made a raised lettuce table out of an old table. So you like took the top off the table and turned yes. that into a raised bed for lettuce, which I thought was so great because then the snails can't get to it.
Yeah.
So tell us about some of the unusual things that we can use for containers for making raised beds.
Well, I think the table is probably the most popular one that was in the book. Certainly a lot of people like to talk about that one. But I also discovered sort of the magic of fabric raised beds. So, you know, you can get these great raised beds that, you know, are a square or round shaped. I discovered them a few years ago in Quebec City when we were on a garden writers tour, and they were all over the city and they were using them to landscape. And also they're a lot lighter. So if you're concerned about weight on a balcony or a deck, then fabric is a nice raised bed option. And then apparently they're really good because of the porous material. They allow a process called air pruning. So apparently it's really good for the roots of your plants. So I plant potatoes in mine every year. You could plant spreaders. So, you know, you're not going to have a huge raised bed full of mint, but you definitely don't want it in your actual garden. So you could have a nice small raised bed of mint. Galvanized tubs. So they use a lot of these at botanical gardens and community gardens. And they're like those they call them stock tanks if you're looking for them, perhaps through a farmer's hardware store. And you can use these nice big horse troughs essentially that are used to hydrate livestock as a garden. And I even have a tip about if you don't want to fill the entire thing with soil, you know, you can, there's some tricks you can use to just fill them up halfway.
Yeah, I saw that in there. And I really love those galvanized tubs. I love the look. It's kind of industrial, urban, you know, just it looks really, really cool. But yeah, you can fill up the bottom with other things so that it's not an entire, you know, four feet tall, or yeah. I guess it's not even that big, but you know, it's like 2.5 or 3 feet tall. It doesn't have to be solid soil unless you're growing trees, I guess, if you could use it for that. But good point about the invasives though. I'm glad you brought that up because yes, if you're growing something like mint, or there was another one that you mentioned, what was it? Chamomile.
Yeah.
Is a good thing to put in some sort of a container so that it doesn't, you know, get all over the place. So
things that like to come back.
Yeah. Maybe not spread. Where you want them to come back too.
Exactly.
There was also, you even had trash cans. You used trash cans for some of your raised beds, which I thought was really great.
Yeah, old recycling bins. They use that at one of the local botanical gardens here. The kids can, you know, take the potatoes out of the recycling bins at the end of the season and they see, you know, where their food came from. So it's a great lesson as well, you know, to be able to upcycle and then also to be able to show them where their food comes from.
Yeah.
And then I had a great kit where everything that comes in this particular kit was sent to my door, and all I needed to do was borrow a socket wrench from my dad and just make sure all the bolts were tightened. And that was all I needed for that raised bed, which was really nice because, you know, if you don't have the tools either, you know, it's nice to be able to still be able to put something together.
So it came as a kit. It had your wood already pre-cut.
Yes, everything I needed was pre-cut, pre-drilled. There were little bags with all the nuts and bolts that I needed, very thorough instructions. And then it even came with recipe cards where you could plant a salsa garden and just ideas for what types of things that you could put in this particular raised bed.
Ah, that's really good. I know you even had some in there that had like wheels. So like you could move things around. And really anyone can build a raised bed to be any size, shape, color, and it can be mobile or not mobile, and it can be at any height.
Absolutely. And the casters was a great one because a couple of the projects I built are rather heavy. So to be able to just wheel those into the shed or the garage at the end of the season is really nice instead of having to lift them out.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they're rather heavy.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Well, one thing we haven't talked about yet, and that is the watering aspect. And I know you recommend that if we can to use dripper systems.
Yes, and that's one thing that is missing from my yard, as my poor parents can attest, because they had to come and water everything when I was away this past summer. But there's some things that you might want to do before you get everything all planted. And irrigation is certainly, you know, there's some great systems out there now that are very easy for the home gardener to put together, or you can even just call in an expert to figure out, you know, if you're running longer lines from your hose. You can have timers that you put on them. So especially if you do go away, it'll make sure that your garden is watered. And if it rains, it won't water it. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing sprinklers when it's raining on a lawn. So, you know, there's just all sorts of great technology out there now that allow you to easily water your garden. And I even found one that is just a little spike, and you use a water bottle upside down to, as a, and there's drip lines between all the plants that help to water the garden. So lots of great watering options out there.
Yeah, that's nice. Because if you're going to set this all up and then go on vacation, because it's the soil is kind of raised up and gets warmed up, it can dry out. So you don't want it to, you know, you don't want to come back from your trip and have lost everything. That's for sure.
No. That would be very heartbreaking.
Yeah. Well, Tara, what would you say to someone who's even considering maybe just putting in one raised bed? Like, just in closing, what would you say to encourage them?
I would say that, you know, even for experienced gardeners, it's still trial and error. So if something doesn't work out your first season, you know, try again and just maybe do a little bit of research to see perhaps if it was a soil issue or a watering issue or a spacing issue with your plants, but don't give up.
Ah, good advice. Very good advice. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it, because I think this is, you know, enough to wet people's whistle. If they have a spot that they're like, huh, maybe this would be a good place to put a raised bed, I definitely think that you've encouraged them to do that. So thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's been great chatting with you.
So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Tara Nolan, the author of Raised Bed Revolution. As I said before, I will have in the show notes for this episode everything that Tara talked about, including some of the resources that she mentioned, her website, her book, and I'm also going to have in the show notes some information on how you calculate out how much soil you need if you are going to be purchasing your soil in bulk. It can be a little intimidating to do the math. It's super easy, I promise. Tara has information in her book on how to do it, and I will list out how you calculate that in the show notes. So to get to the show notes, just go to livinghomegrown.com/124. So that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast. I really appreciate it that you took time out of your busy day to listen. So until next time, just try to live a little more local, seasonal, and homegrown. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Living Homegrown Podcast. Visit livinghomegrown.com to download Teresa's free canning resource guide and find more tips on how to live farm fresh without the farm. Be sure to join Teresa Lowe next time on the Living Homegrown Podcast.